This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Relax this Sunday with a little moment to yourself and the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
Queen Charlotte, the official podcast, is a production of Shondaland Audio in partnership with iHeartRadio. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a truly special episode of Queen Charlotte, a Bridgerton story, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins, and today we have the honor of being in the presence of one of the most influential voices in television and streaming, a trailblazer who has revolutionized the small screen, big screen, all the screens with her exceptional storytelling. So join me in extending a very warm welcome from wherever you are. Just pause right now to just say, yes, Shonda Rhimes, because Shonda Rhimes is here. And we're going to talk about Queen Charlotte. So let's just get right into it. Shonda Rhimes, thank you for joining the podcast. We're here to talk about Queen Charlotte, a Bridgerton story. And we're going to just jump in and talk about characters, story. I have to say, first of all, one of the things I love is a good flashback. And Shondaland's body of work knows how to treat a flashback or a flash forward or a rewind like a delicacy. And that, I think, is something that fans really appreciate. And so Queen Charlotte, a Bridgerton story, is everything for the person that loves that vehicle. Are there any moments from your early career to now, considering the impact Queen Charlotte, its imagery, its stories, will have on audiences? Is there anything in your life that you can look back on and say, this is completely connected to this moment, or you are answering a call or a question that you may have asked yourself a long time ago?
That's fascinating. That's a really good question. And I say it's fascinating because I've never thought of it in any way, shape, or form. I have this allergy to looking back on what I've done and trying to tie it or trying to understand why I do what I do or write what I write. I try really hard to let that just be a muse flying around in the Ethernet or the ether and going from there.
That's so interesting to hear you say that, seeing our characters connecting what's happening to them in that moment to maybe the scene we had just seen.
Ah, well, that's definitely written into the show. That idea, you know, in terms of the characters, I really loved the way that we used the young Charlotte past to really understand the Bridgerton era present. there were certain things in there that I thought were really powerful, even for me to see played out. And I didn't even know it'd be as powerful as they were when it happened.
Yeah. So in everything that we're seeing about young Charlotte, again, this is interesting because you don't do this yourself, but connecting the dots, I was wondering if present day Queen Charlotte, kind of that grandeur, of course, it's the Regency era, but her own kind of need for excess and more. She's looking at the tree and it's like more gold. I mean, everything's just lavish. Is there anything about that that we see that is connected to the absences and loneliness and missing pieces in her relationship with King George and any of her other relationships?
You're really seeing, as much as I can possibly portray it for the audience, a sense of how she began and how she ended up. And that lavishness, that, you know, that need for grandeur and glory, which is always so present in our Regency era, Charlotte. When you see it in the past, when you get there in the past, there is a definite loneliness. That loneliness is still in the present. And I like keeping that alive. But she's now filled it with things, literal things. And that was important to me to show, that that's how she spends her time. If you are that isolated from the world, that is how you spend your time.
I got an opportunity to speak with Tom Verica, and we were talking about the character Queen Charlotte and just those first images we see of her. And I was expressing to him that that first time we see her walking down that hallway to her brother, kind of signing her away as part of a package deal, I'm wondering about everything that came before that moment. And also just the tone. Everything really seems kind of like blue. And I'm wondering if there is any specific reason why you chose to go that direction. There's like this balance of loss and love that's kind of more front and center than we may have seen before in this franchise. And I'm wondering if why that's so and why that is by design.
Well, partially because it was written by me. And honestly, like, I can't write as well, just keeping everything light and fluffy. And also because we're seeing the world from this character's point of view. Like, we're seeing young Charlotte discover that she's been sold away. And that really, to me, is the moment. Up until then, she's been a happy, free, overindulged princess. I mean, really. And has always felt like she is in control of her own fate. So much so that when you see her talking to her brother about it in the next scene in the carriage, you realize that she truly believes that they could turn the carriage around. That how dare he do this? Like, she's still thinking that she can get some agency here. And what we're seeing is this is the very first moment for this girl where all agency is taken away. And I love that because, you know, we don't need to see her before that to understand what that means and how that feels.
I understand that. She also, just the way she's written, she seems so wise beyond her years. She says, she reveals that she's 10 and 7 years. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, how are you so well put together, your thoughts and perspectives on love? And it was really interesting to see how that character kind of expresses that to young King George. And he seems to either get it or catch on really quickly. And they both are able to really communicate on this level that's really deep.
You know, there's a level of maturity there simply because, you know, generally in the real world, you know, they're dead by 30, you know, in terms of not really, but in general, lifespans are much shorter and you're forced to grow up much earlier. And I really wanted to portray that, especially if you were marrying into a royal family. They got you young sometimes. Mm-hmm. And she's marrying a man she's only known for 6 hours. So she's had to really, even in the beginning parts, do some growing up to get where she is by the time she's sort of saying, I am 10 and 7 years old to George. She's already had to grow up a ton there. It's the being dropped in a world where you don't know the rules. She's finding her way. And what we're finding is that there's a well of power in there that she didn't know she had. And for George, he was born to be king. He's never been anything else. He's never had anything else. So for him, this path is, it's inevitable.
You know, it also seems that she knows her role. She knows what she's supposed to do. She's, you know, where's my honeymoon diary? My, you know, she's ready to go. She's expecting things. But at the same time, there are moments where it seems that she really doesn't have a grasp of who she is now. And I'm thinking about the moment when Agatha tells her her palace walls are too high and mm-hmm. that she needs to stop worrying about this boy and really get with it. That was an amazing moment for me because I felt like that was a moment of like a big sister or a friend. Agatha was not only operating for herself in that moment. And I thought that was really an interesting opportunity to show that instead of cutting Charlotte down.
Well, I think what's important is that you said that Charlotte seems together and she seems to know what to expect. She doesn't. All she knows is that she's being married. She knows how to get married. I mean, she's seen weddings before. And she has a vague idea of what happens after you get married, right? Just right. A very vague idea because she's been told almost nothing. So for me, what's great about Agatha and her role there is from the very beginning, you know, Charlotte's dropped into a world where she doesn't necessarily realize that people don't look like her in general, because she came from a place where her family was the royal family. You know, if she's, you know, Black Portuguese royalty, her family was the royal family. So what's there to think about? That's an incredible place of privilege. And to come from that incredible place of privilege to a place where you are a novelty, an oddity, is interesting. And to not realize that you have a responsibility to the people of color around you. Like, she has no notion of that. So what I love is the moment when Agatha sees her and she's walking down the aisle and she really realizes, like, oh, they're going there. We've been given titles and they're going there. It's one of my favorite moments because Agatha is all of us, you know what I mean? All of us in a world looking for a way to find our place and be accepted. There's a huge opportunity there. I think that's what she sees in Charlotte. There's a huge opportunity there. And also, you know, there's that moment when she offers her friendship. If you ever call me, I will come. That's one of those moments that I always feel like it's a woman of color moment. It's such a woman of color moment when you're the only two women of color somewhere and you're like, call me if you need. You know, that moment is a moment that exists for so many people when you're not the majority in the room. And so she offers her that because she knows the entire history of what they're going through. She knows exactly what's coming for Charlotte in so many ways. Charlotte has no clue of her role and what she could possibly be doing to make change. She literally is busy thinking about a boy because she's been having the privilege of doing that versus everybody else who knows the real deal.
That just made my head explode. I think that's so relatable. Why did you want to put that on screen?
Part of the reason I wanted to put it on screen was because, you know, one of the goals of this show was not just to tell Queen Charlotte's origin story, but to tell the origin story of the society that exists in Bridgerton. You know, and at the heart of that, there is this question of race. There is this question of, you know, we call it the love that changed society. So if it's a love that changed society, I need to see how that goes and how it happens. Because Charlotte wouldn't just come in knowing that should happen. You know, she's totally innocent to any of this. And that's both maddening and also such an opportunity for her to, like, grow into a powerful person.
So there's a moment where Lord Herman Danbury tells Agatha to act like she's been places and to know where she is and to act a certain way. It really made me wonder more about their union and how that match came to be. And I wondered how Lady Whistledown would report on their union if she were in existence. Like, did Agatha marry up or down? And just a little bit more about what that history is there. Does that even matter where they come from?
Oh, it does.
Okay.
It does.
Yeah.
You know, all of those moments I really feel proud of because I really chose those moments to try to reveal to you her life. And it's not that he's saying act like you've been here before because he's been there before. None of them have been there before. I really loved portraying this incredible sadness for Herman because, you know, Agatha may not like him. She may not love him, but she cares for him as a man of color in this society. She knows what he's lost. So when she says to him, you are just as good as the rest of them, like that's such a tender moment because she's always going to be taking care of that for him while she has her own ambitions as well. She feels responsible for everybody of color. She's standing this close to the queen. She is responsible for everyone else. So there are these moments, definitely.
Do you think she was more keen than Charlotte? Because she was making these all of these moves before her family came to her after Lord Danbury died and asked her what the next move was. She was already being strategic.
And by the way, that wasn't her family who came to her. If you think about the Bridgerton world, they were the predecessors to many, like the Duke that we all love.
Yes.
His father was there as a young man. Other people were there as young men. So people who already existed in our world in Bridgerton, those are the ancestors of those people. And I did that on purpose because I wanted to make sure that we understood that one world was connected to the next.
So the question of our is our side, not just our, yes, our line, our whole side, everybody here who is assimilated into the ton.
All of them who have been elevated and swept up into the ton, which provides them all kinds of rights and responsibilities, especially after Agatha makes the play to say, we deserve land, we deserve to, you know, get into whites, we deserve for our husbands to go to the hunts, all of that stuff. I mean, they could have been elevated, but then they could have sort of done a whole separate but equal thing, right? Mm-hmm. They elevated them and Agatha made sure that they were actually placed inside the society. Losing that has implications for Agatha, but it has bigger implications for all of them and what's going to happen. They're all going to lose their title. They're all going to lose their space. And as she says, like, they've had a taste. They've had a taste of this and they're going to demand it. And I have to make that happen. That's really her stress and her fear. And that's also in the beginning, because I love the friendship between Agatha and Charlotte. It's really one of my favorite things. But that friendship comes from a very selfish place for Agatha in the beginning. Like, she's like, I gotta secure things. When she finds out that Charlotte doesn't know how to make a baby, like, she's livid about those things, not because poor Charlotte, but because if you haven't consummated, you're not the queen. If you're not the queen, we're screwed. Like, that's really what's in there. And I don't know, for her at that young age to have to be the person managing that is really interesting to me.
We are just getting started. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with more from Shonda Rhimes.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but like, I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring? but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Relax this Sunday with a little moment to yourself and the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
Welcome back to Queen Charlotte, the official podcast. We're here with the visionary Shonda Rhimes, and our dialogue continues, and we're going to shed light on her world. So let's dive back into our talk with Shonda.
I feel like no one is there for Agatha in the way she's there for Violet and Charlotte. No one's teaching her. No one is, you know, drawing things down for her. She's figuring it out. She's in the midst of intercourse, mapping out who this list is that's going to be coming, that's going to, you know, come over to this, to the ball. No one is guiding her. And I feel that most in her conversation with Violet later on in present day. Uh-huh. It's the moment she has a conversation with Violet and says that Violet is most fortunate. And I would not have heard that conversation as a woman of color or Indigenous woman talking about a host of things without the Great Experiment as the backdrop. It would have been a flat, like, you're lucky that you had love, but this it was way deeper, and I couldn't quite touch what it was, but you confirmed that that's what it was. It is that.
There's a well.
That well.
And for, yeah. I mean, I'll tell you, because I did a lot of thinking about how this all laid out. For Agatha, in that moment in the time, in the past, in the Georgian times, she is probably the wife of the richest man of color there. She has the what's it called? The cachet of his father, the king, knew, you know, her father, the king, the princess's father, the king. So they're like the highest ranking people of color who live in that society. They have more money than everybody. They have more. And that's great until you find out that, you know, they don't necessarily have more, but they have more status than almost anybody because she is the, you know, the wife of a man whose father was king. But Agatha also really came from someplace too. There's that wonderful moment when they go to see, George's mom and sort of ask her for an answer, like, please do this for me. Let us stay in our place. And they walk out and she's brought this four-year-old boy with her to say, this is the Lord Danbury. Her fate rests, by the way, on who this four-year-old gets to be, because women don't inherit anything.
Did I do my duty, Mother?
You showed them who you are.
Dominic Danbury, son of Herman Danbury.
Yes, you are. And you are Lord Danbury. And you will take your rightful place because you are entitled to it. Because you are my son. You are the son of Agatha Danbury. Born name Soma, royal blood of the Pamende Mbo tribe in Sierra Leone. You come from warriors. We win. Never forget that.
So she brings little Lord Danbury in, and when they walk out and she bends down and he's like, yeah, she's like, we know who you are. And he's like, yeah, I'm Lord Danbury, son of Herman Danbury. And she's like, no, you are my child and we are from this tribe. And we are, you know, born named Soma. I love that moment so much. It was suggested by Adjoa, who plays Lady Danbury. Not the moment, but that information. And I thought that was really powerful, to be like, we are a tribe in our own right. Like, I come from someplace. The difference is that as a woman, she's powerless. Your whole fate rests in the hands of what some man does, has, or wants you to get.
Wow, that is the confirmation my soul needed. Yes, that is, yes.
Good.
That is amazing that Adjua suggested that bit of information there. Mm-hmm. That is major. Could you tell me a little bit more about how that conversation came about and make me a fly on the wall?
You know, it's easy though, because Adjua has always felt like she could, you know, say things to me or talk to me or really try to educate me on what it meant to be Black and British now.
Mm.
Because that's very different than being Black and American now. There's a fraught history there. And so when she would make these suggestions to me and say, you know, this would, you know, track them back to their relationships in Africa, this would track them back to, I loved it because I thought it was a really powerful thing. So we didn't have difficult conversations. A lot of the times, Adjua would just tell me how it was, and I'd go, okay, and find a way to use it, because she was filled with gems in those cases.
With that being said, do you think, though, that there will be a very big response to some of this? I mean, the name of the show is Queen Charlotte, A Bridgerton Story. But as a viewer myself, I am all about Agatha Danbury. And I'm wondering what you think about that.
I have to say, I was obsessed with Agatha. I really was. Like, I was obsessed, because you have to think about this. Charlotte's the innocent. She doesn't know anything. She's not able to really do anything in the beginning. You know, India gives an amazing, layered, gorgeous performance. But Agatha's the one with the giant conundrum. Like, she holds, you know, society on her shoulders. If she fails, all these people of color are going to be shoved back down to where they were before, which is not even present in any of this world. They'll get no pieces of the pie. And so for her, like, she's very aware. And I love that she feels like a woman who understands her time. You know, for instance, she is in bed with, you know, Lord Danbury, and it's clearly not very pleasant, but he's not being abusive. He's not attacking her. He's just never considered that a woman would enjoy anything, any of this. And it's possible that neither has she. So to watch her grow and find these spaces for herself and come into her own, and like the moment she tells the queen off, that's not, there's this great moment when they're having tea and she's come to see her for the first time and she's not sure why she's there. And she says, oh, you've consummated the marriage, right? And she gets looked at very blankly by Queen Charlotte. And
so
she says, dear God, Charlotte, have you consummated? She's not calling her your majesty anymore. She's like, I'm dealing with a girl here, like a very ignorant, spoiled little girl who's talking about-
She gets familiar really quick.
Your majesty, I am still allowed to speak freely.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about consummating the marriage. You and the king did consummate the marriage, did you not? You have to have- Your Majesty, Charlotte, if you did not consummate the marriage, you are not actually married to the king. Your whole position is in danger. Oh, great experiment is in danger. My God, you did consummate. You do know what I mean when I say consummate. Perform the marital act.
Does it have something to do with this great experiment?
And it's also like a spoiled little girl, like she's mad about the dog, which is why in the end of that piece, she's like, that is a very rare Pomeranian. Like, your beliefs that all of this is just whatever, those are things that people don't get. You are privileged beyond what you know.
Wow.
And I had a lot of fun with that.
I was wondering, I was like, does Shonda have a thing against Pomeranians? What's going on?
I love the Pomeranians, yeah. But yeah. It really was about her getting this very rare, beautiful thing and being like, ew, you know, and not understanding that she's getting something that almost nobody else in her country would ever receive.
What a beautiful dog, Your Majesty.
'Tis a deformed bunny.
Oh, my mistake, Your Majesty.
Was wondering if there was a direct connection to this idea of breeding and maybe the purity of the breed of dog. But it's the fact that it's a rare gift.
It's a rare gift.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about the breeding part at all, but yeah, no, it's more about the fact that it's just you don't understand what you have, and you know, and she's completely oblivious and whining. And I love watching Charlotte come into her own and to realize both what is wrong with how she's being, but also what is important about her. And then by the end, when she's standing there talking to Agatha, Lady Danbury, and she says to her, you know, you did not come to me with this problem. You know, you should, you know, right. That is an insult. She is very much a large piece of the queen we know in the Bridgerton era. Like, she's gotten there and she knows her power and she knows how to utilize the power, because she doesn't actually have any power. Her husband does, but she's going to be the one to utilize it as much as possible because he really can't.
Yeah. You hit something there that has been riding under the surface for me too, which is these flash forwards. I think a lot of times we watch television or we speak to people in our lives and we're like, oh, there's a glimmer of what that person used to be. And it can even get ageist sometimes. But I mm-hmm. felt like this time we were seeing that like you said, these present day depictions of everyone who we see, they were always there. We are just seeing how they emerged. Even Brimsley. And Brimsley. Yeah, I love Brimsley. I really do.
He's delightful. There's that moment when Lady Danbury says to Violet, you know, she says, Lady Whistledown never writes of our stories or of writes of our hearts. And what I loved about that, I'm not sure, but what I loved about that was they are overlooked. These women have been overlooked by our audiences, even. They're not looking at them and thinking of them in these full three-dimensional people. You know, they're sort of symbolic people for them. And I really wanted to give you a sense of who they were really internally, and to hear that like bitterness from Lady Danbury, and to understand that she's done something and she's kept it a secret from Violet all these years. Because it's what saves her. It's what suits her. I think those things are interesting to see from these women.
Is Agatha really anyone's friend?
Yes. So what I think is beautiful about where she starts with Queen Charlotte is she starts in a world in which she's like, this is an opportunity. This chick is an opportunity. She's, you know, I'm riding that all the way to the bank. But as they go through, I think she feels sorry for her. She feels compassion for her. But the very real friendship really comes when she says to her, you know, at that end, when Charlotte's run away, when she said, you know, I have not actually been your friend. Like, she's looking at this woman who desperately needs a friend. And she's like, I have not actually been your friend. I have been your subject, because basically I wanted a bunch of stuff from you. And she's like, but I am happy to willing and to try to be your friend. I'm happy and willing. And I love that, because it was a really true moment between these two women. It was Agatha sort of truly offering her friendship and really opening herself and giving Charlotte something, because Charlotte's the loneliest person on the planet, but everybody says yes to her all the time. And basically Agatha was vowing not to be that person anymore, not to be somebody who was just using her for stuff.
Two thoughts that came to mind just now is I almost feel like Agatha's friendship is, it's a privilege to be befriended by Agatha because of all of her value. And I don't remember where I saw or heard this, but I heard something to the effect of, reality television is teaching us how to do conflict resolution. I see this series as teaching us how to become friends with someone. We don't typically see it orchestrated like that. So I thought that was really, really special to see all of this deliberate, we're going to be friends, we're going to strengthen our relationship. Violet and Lady Bridgerton and Lady Danbury at the gallery, you know, getting deep, and that moment of silence between them, surrounded by Lord Ledger's hats. That silence, I wanted to ask you, what is in that silence? Fill that space for us. But what, it's so big.
I love that silence so much. And I remember I wrote the scene, and the first time I wrote it, there was like all this conversation and blah, 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 blah. And then I went back and I was just looking at the scene, and I crossed it all. I deleted it all. And I wrote a stage direction for these two women. That's the, also the joy, by the way, to get to work with Ruth and Adjoa. They're such amazing actors. They all are. So to get to write a stage direction that was basically like they stare at each other, and in that stare is communicated both the pain and hurt that you know, pain of Agatha and the pain of Violet, and the hurt that Violet feels from the betrayal of keeping the secret, and the forgiveness that Agatha has. To just get to write that as a stage direction and then to watch it happen, very few people can pull off that kind of thing, and they are spectacular.
I mean, the poise, the way they sat almost at the same time, slowly.
Which was a decision, we're not going to discuss it. You know what I mean? We've said all we need to say. We're not going to discuss it. Let's get back to regular life.
I loved that so much. It truly gave me chills. And there's a lot of physicality that I wondered if you wrote into the stage directions. I'm thinking about Princess Augusta, who I adore. I mean, it was the pear brandy moment for me.
Yes.
And of course, Michelle Fairley is wonderful as Princess Augusta. Wondering if there's, yes, the stage directions. Did you, I felt, and maybe this was a Michelle's choice, but I felt like she was also trying to make a lot of moves, but she couldn't move and was almost in her physicality.
Well, when we talked about the character, that character is as trapped as all of these other women. Like, she's seems to hold some power, but she's in a room with a bunch of men that she basically has to manipulate into doing what she needs done. And if they were to say different, she'd be out. So to me, like, she's just as constrained as they are and deeply trying to find a way around it. You asked me about stage directions, and I want to say this. The moment when Princess Augusta takes her finger and tries to rub off Charlotte's skin is one of my favorite moments. And I wrote it, and I wasn't sure how it was going to feel or how it was going to come out. And it just, to me, tells you everything you need to know about that world in that moment.
In that moment, I said, oh, okay, we're really talking about it this time. We're really getting into it. And India's reaction was stellar. It was really...
India is such an amazing actress. She really is. There was not a moment when I was like, oh, we shouldn't be doing this. Any piece of film that she was in, I was like, that's perfect. She's really great. Gold is great. They're all really great.
Shonda, what is the deal with Lord Bute? Is he for the great experiment? Is he against it? I just need to know.
You know, it's not, Lord Bute's a real character in history, number one. And he was, some thought that he basically ran the country through Augusta. And I think that what I was trying to portray was that she's running the country through him a little bit. But I don't ever say whether he's for the greatest. I think he finds it distasteful and confusing and upsetting. But if it works, it works. And I loved putting in there this idea that they may all hate this. They may all think that what she's saying is absolutely stupid. But she's saying, the king says. So it doesn't matter. It's treason to suggest otherwise. They're perfectly fine with what the king says.
Well, that makes sense. Because I was also wondering, what's in it for Princess Augusta if they consummate this relationship or not, or produce a royal heir?
If they fail to produce an heir, I mean, truly, if they fail to produce an heir, George won't be king, or he'll be the last one. And there's all these rumors swirling around about who George is and if he's mad and all those other things. To then not also produce an heir, they would have to go to another line in the family. She would lose everything. And that's really what she talks about in that wonderful pear brandy scene, which is she endured what she had to endure to get her son to the place that he needs to be. And and that's really about getting herself to the place that she needs to be.
At least there's a moment where she's speaking with young Agatha and she says, or else the great experiment will fail. And that's where Agatha is like, well, I could host a ball. Is Princess Augusta, is that her last shred of holding on to her baby boy? Because I felt like there was also a lot of parent slash adult child relationship conversation happening throughout this series, including with the queen's children.
She definitely loves her son. And I want to talk about Princess Augusta versus the queen in a second.
Okay.
She definitely loves her son, but truly she has put this crazy thing out there that we're going to do this great experiment, something that nobody's comfortable with ever, right? So she's put that out there. And if that fails, they will stop listening to her when she says, the king said, like, and then she's out again. The great experiment can't fail because what she's come up with to solve this problem of this brown girl showing up to be queen is this. And it can't fail because if it fails, she's out. She's got no more power left. The other thing I want to say, because there's this, and I didn't even know that I totally realized this until I was like halfway done writing the show. There's this wonderful connection between Augusta's deep, deep panic desire to have an heir and Regent Sierra, Queen Charlotte's deep, deep, deep desire to produce an heir for her, you know, with her 15 children, 14 children or whatever. That desire for both of them is about their power. For Queen Charlotte, it's also about bloodline. Like, that to me was really important. She wanted the bloodline of her and George to be running through the royal family for all of time, right? And that's a way of saying, I need to set our legacy. I need to make us go forward. You know, you being the last king in this line would be terrible because it would have meant, in a lot of ways for them, the great experiment had failed. The same way it would have meant for Princess Augusta that the great experiment had failed.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back shortly with more insights and inspiration from Shonda right after this break.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but like, I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Don't forget to pack the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies to steal a moment for yourself before the week ahead. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
We're back, and we're talking with Shonda Rhimes, so let me not get in the way. Let's just get right back into it. I so badly want to know more about Reynolds and Brimsley and where their relationship began and how they also chose each other within all of that. And I'm thinking about everything we just spoke about and the moment that Queen Charlotte asks present day Brimsley if he's ever loved.
I never try to tell anybody the backstory of Brimsley's relationship. The same way I don't tell the backstory of Agatha's relationship. I don't tell that stuff because in a lot of ways you can imagine it in your own mind and build it in your own mind, and your romantic versions or non-romantic versions are what they are. I will say this, when we start, they are the two most important servants in the world that they work in. You know, he holds the queen, she holds the king. Those are really big responsibilities. And the idea that they're supposed to somehow find a way to hold the king and the queen together is massive. But Brimsley's not allowed to do his job in terms of that and all of that, because while he knows some, he does not know all. And Reynolds knows everything on his side. So you have this weird battle where they basically influence a lot of the world around them. Like, there's a lot of Brimsley making and guiding Charlotte in directions she would never have gone in, and a lot of Reynolds guiding the king in the way he's gone it. The king is a commodity. He is a brand. He is a, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
He's an immunity idol almost in a lot of ways. The king is really important because while he's not interested in being king, while he's, you know, got all of these issues and problems, without him, none of them would have their jobs. None of them would be in that, be in those castles. They'd be, you know, emptied out for another family line. So to me, what was most important is poor George, everybody is looking to him to keep their lives stable and what they are. And he's, like he says, you know, I have, you know, I'm very aware of what it means to be the king. I know what this is, and he's coping the only way he can. And for him, at a certain point, it becomes clear that Charlotte's the one person who is in it with him. Not necessarily doesn't want to hold him up and make him king, but is in it with him, like as a team member versus somebody trying to manipulate him.
That part right there to me is most clear in the moment when he's about to have a, for lack of better phrasing, a meltdown. And it's right before a speech, I think maybe to Parliament.
Mm-hmm.
And Parliament. She comes out and she's like, you got this. And she turns around to Brimsley and says, he's got this. And in that moment for me, she wasn't pretending to be confident. She truly was invested and believed he had it. And that belief, I think, is everything about their relationship, that belief in each other. That was very evident and amazing to see such young people be able to grasp.
And it was such a complex thing for them to do because the dangers are everywhere around that. You know, any failure is incredibly detrimental. And all he wants, he needs to be king. She wants it for him. I don't know, I love that because they're kind of business partners
right now,
you know, in that world. And that is all he needed was a partner, somebody who was going to stand by his side. They love each other, but more importantly, she can help carry a mantle of power with him.
Thinking about power, staying in that vein, there's this moment Brimsley tells the young Queen Charlotte that if there's ever anything she can't do or isn't supposed to do, he will find a way to tell her how she can do it anyway. I was wondering if there's anyone in your life that does that for you.
That would be suggesting that I'm somehow part of a royal family of some kind. So no.
Well, no.
But so no.
Who gives you permission to do what you're not supposed to be doing?
Well, that's the point, by the way, is that I now live in a world where I don't need to ask anybody's permission to do what I want to do. And I'm really fascinated by the constraints placed on women who do have to ask permission or who did have to ask permission. You know, it's sort of that we make our own money now. We make our own decisions. We don't necessarily need to be married to have a baby. We buy our own homes. We are all independent. Things that, you know, even 50 years ago, you couldn't get a credit card unless a man said you could. You couldn't rent an apartment unless a man signed off for you. I'm really looking at that world in which all of her agency is constrained because she's a woman. And Brimsley is her little side door out, which I love. He's willing to break a few rules for her. And to me, I love that moment because it showed how much he liked her, how much he cared about her.
Yeah. I did oftentimes wonder if Charlotte cared for him in this similarly. That I think there's, maybe.
No, there's this amazing moment for me when she asks, as an you know, older Queen Charlotte, she asks Brimsley, "Why did you never marry? Or did you never marry?" And Brimsley says what he says, which is, you know, "Who would want to marry me? I'm always here serving."
"Brimsley, have you any family? Did you never marry?"
"No, Your Majesty. Who could I ever find who would be free to spend a lifetime with me? I'm here. Everyone here cares for the king."
There's this moment that I just couldn't get enough of. When he walks away, the look on Charlotte's face is devastating. Because, A, she's never thought to ask him before. Now think about that, how long they've been together. She's never thought to ask him before because all he does is see to her needs. And B, she sort of realizes what a person like that gives up in order to serve her. It's devastating.
Why didn't he ever get married, though? Like, what happened to Reynolds?
That's a whole other show.
Okay.
I mean,
I want to know what happened to Reynolds. He was dancing by himself. I'm like, wait a minute.
That's one of my favorite moments, is when he's dancing and then he's dancing alone. They're dancing together and then he's dancing alone. And you just feel his heart break. I loved doing that. I loved giving that to the actor who played Brimsley, because he just knocked that out of the park. He was wonderful.
Yeah, Hugh Sachs was so memorable. Even I spoke with Tom about some of the action on set, and there's a moment where he throws a look over his shoulder after Queen Charlotte is just disgusted with her sons, and mm-hmm. it's just such a magical moment to capture. Felt very present day.
Yeah, I just love that they're in unison. If the queen hates, if the queen's annoyed with you, he's annoyed with you. You know, it all follows in a way that's kind of lovely.
Right. Right. So we got to spend time with a doctor in this series. And wow, that was dark. What? Tell me about the doctor, Shonda. What's that?
You're not the first person to say this. You know, I obviously have had a medical show for lots of years. I obviously am very aware of doctors and their standards of care. But one of the things I was very interested in is the history of medicine. Mm. Really looking at, you know, where we were and how far we've come. The idea that not only did they not know what King George had, you know, some people called it humor. Some people said he had stomach issues. Some people said it was neurological. Some people said he was mad. Like all of these things, it could have been mental health. They don't know. And as little as they knew about medicine then, and treating somebody who they don't quite know what they have, that's a dangerous combination. It's a really dangerous combination. But even more importantly, we researched that stuff. That's what they did to people. That is what King George endured. They put an ice bath in the kitchens and they forced him to do those ice baths. They did all of that stuff to him because to them, that was a path to curing. They're completely wrong and, you know, completely bonkers about it, but that's a path to curing. And think about how confident that doctor must be. He's the man who got, you know, George through meeting a fiance, through the wedding. Like he's now depended upon. So to him, you're a little puffed up, but you also believe my methods are working.
Right. It's interesting too that the garden, I mean, there's the garden metaphor throughout for all of the characters, but for King George, it was where he did find peace and calm. And it's so interesting that's a form of therapy today, you know, like get your hands in the soil.
But it was also considered, I think then, or in the way we told the story, as part of his illness, because what king would want to roll up his sleeves and put his hands in the dirt?
Hmm.
I mean, Charlotte says that even.
Yeah.
It's like, what is he doing?
She asked if there was any hallucinogens.
Right. She's like, are there any herbs in the garden? And right. You know that's what she's asking for. Are there drugs in here? I don't get it. I know, it was right up there with saying, like, is King George growing some pot? I'm not right. sure. Yeah.
There is actually a lot of comedy in this series. I was saying sorrow's prayers for maybe a week.
Oh my God.
I thought that was so incredibly funny. And just the symphony of the children chattering and talking to the queen. Could you please give listeners a little bit of how you heard that in your head while you were writing those scenes?
I had really a lot of fun writing those scenes. I loved Sorrow's Prayers, and I will admit that I walked around saying it for a long time until my kids told me to stop.
Sorrow's Prayers.
There was something about how would the queen deal with this. We've never seen the queen deal with her children. This we're on the other side of the hall, really, watching the queen deal with her children. We never see that in Bridgerton. It's very clear that she's, you know, not a capable mother, but she's a mother of her time. She's a mother of her time, just the way all of them were. People took your babies away, and then you didn't see them again until they were four, and then you sent them off to boarding school or whatever. So there's this amazing sense of she's got all of these children. She's so fantastic. She's, you know, her husband was so accomplished, and they who have been given everything are useless, which I think is something anybody can relate to today. Like this idea of you've been handed everything and therefore you just want to do nothing. Her children literally like laid about, went partied, slept with actresses, had mistresses, hired prostitutes, and never bothered. They had 50 illegitimate children. That fact was real. I couldn't believe it. 50 illegitimate children. And she just couldn't, you know, the idea of controlling them was so frustrating. I loved dealing with that. I had so much fun writing that stuff and thinking, how do you deal with the grief of your child over the loss of his daughter when you really need them to get it together and do something? That's how where the Sorrow's Prayers came from. It was a very nice, like, shorthand dealing with him.
It was incredibly funny.
One of my most favorite moments that was funny that I didn't know was be as funny until I saw it on screen was Violet talking about her garden being in bloom.
Yeah, Ruth Gemmel.
Yeah, she was amazing with that, you know, like trying desperately to explain what she means and not being able to really, and just being so embarrassed.
It seems my garden is in bloom.
It is the middle of winter, the ground is frozen.
My husband and I had a garden, a luscious garden with many varieties of flowers. And when he died, the garden died. And I did not even think of the garden. I did not want the garden. But lately, without warning, the garden has begun to bloom.
The garden?
And now it wants things. Sunlight. Touch.
Your garden is in bloom.
It is blooming out of control.
Oh, Violet.
I am becoming dangerous, Agatha.
I'm sure.
I almost asked a footman to lie on top of me today.
My goddess, Bridgerton. What?
I must go. It was lovely to see you.
Oh, Violet.
No, I have been at the exhibition far longer than I planned. Good day.
And I use that because the Violet that we know in Bridgerton couldn't even explain to her daughter how babies were made in season one. She's talking about there were dogs and then there were puppies and that's all she can say. So the embarrassment that she feels to have to say that her garden is in bloom was so much fun for me to watch.
That it was. I think also Adjoa's reaction was just, you know, just fed into it. That was really cool to see. Yeah, it really was. You know, I thought that all of the scenes where we see Agatha with Lord Danbury in their marital bed were really funny. But the moment she's drinking port wine, Agatha's drinking port wine, I felt terrible for thinking it was funny. I'm like, oh, this character is a person who really despised her husband. I mean, we talked about how she still stood up for him as for his, you know, identity politics. But That port wine monologue. Whoa. That was so heavy. And just the symbolism of the port wine.
I loved that. I loved the moment when you hear like how constrained her life has been. For me, that was big. And it was one of those scenes that I absolutely love because it tells you everything. You know, the idea that she was betrothed at the age of 3 and therefore raised to like anything her husband was going to like, to read the books, to play only the music that he liked, you know, to wear the colors that he liked from a toddler was amazing to me. It also made very clear like what her plight was and why she was searching so hard for some power of her own.
All of what we've seen of Lady Danbury before this series, she's by herself. She's hosting casino night.
She's living the life as free as she can. And she's somehow found peace. You know what I mean? She somehow found a place where she's doing what she wants to do when she wants to do it.
Our time is coming up on the end, but I did want to just take a little more time to talk about episode 4, where we do get to kind of see behind the veil and spend more time with young King George. Was your hope that viewers would appreciate his character for more than just this, in like this missing piece in the portraits and, you know, not at the other end of the table? Or was this an opportunity to just see more of Queen Charlotte?
What I loved about that and that episode was not, I wasn't trying to redeem him in any way, but we had been looking at the world through Charlotte's eyes. Every moment is you're staring at the world through Charlotte's eyes when it's Charlotte and George. Those are all what she thinks and what she perceives and what she's been allowed to know. And I wanted us to go back and show you what those moments had been for him for real. Like there's that thing of perception and reality. Their perceptions and realities were very different. And I loved the idea that we were going to get to go see his reality and how harsh, how imprisoned he was and how difficult his life was. Because I thought that made complete sense to understand why they should be together or how they could come together.
Thank you so much, Shonda Rhimes, for giving us Queen Charlotte, A Bridgerton Story. We'll be rewatching and binging it over and over again and looking forward to more.
Thank you so much. It was great to be here.
Thank you so much. So as we wrap up, we just want to say thank you again to Shonda Rhimes in a very flowery, beautifully written, prosy kind of way, because we want to give all of the flowers and gratitude. And we also want to make sure we're not missing any blind spots. And so this is that right here. And we are so inspired to push boundaries and cross lines and embrace all of the limitless possibilities that lie before us because of the way Shonda and Shondaland present characters that show us that that is possible and that that is life. Until next time, stay curious, stay inspired, and we'll be back with Julia Quinn next week. Queen Charlotte, the official podcast, is executive produced by Sandy Bailey, Lauren Homan, Alex Alche, Tyler Klang, and me, Gabrielle Collins. Our producer and editor is Tari Harrison. Subscribe to the podcast anywhere you get your favorite shows. Get the book. I'm a crispy turn the page, smell the binding kind of queen, but you can download it. And you can find Queen Charlotte, A Bridgerton Story on Netflix. We'll see you next week. Queen Charlotte, the official podcast, is a production of Shondaland Audio in partnership with iHeartRadio. For more podcasts, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
So, should we go electric?
I think we should go electrified with Toyota.
Electrified?
Electrified means options. Yes, we could go all electric with a Toyota bZ4X, but then there are hybrids like Grand Highlander, or we could do something in between like a RAV4 plug-in hybrid.
So, Toyota is electrified diversified?
Yep, and with more options for reducing carbon emissions, the closer we all get to Toyota's Beyond Zero vision for the future.
Exactly how much coffee have you had this morning?
Learn more about our Beyond Zero vision for the future at toyota.com/beyondzero.
Turns out, a delightfully clean home can make for a delightful start to the day. At Mrs. Meyer's, everything they make is inspired by the garden. With plant-derived and other thoughtfully chosen ingredients, their cleaning products smell like a dream and work like the dickens, leaving your home sparkly clean and your to-do list tackled in no time. Goodness, there's no better feeling than that. Mrs. Meyer's, rooted in goodness. Visit MrsMeyer's.com today.